So young people generally are impatient. So I want us to sort of, especially on Friday, I want us to demonstrate our youthfulness. Please, those that are adult youth like myself, please manage that aspect of adult, not to chip in and we prolong us here, because we are running away from the grandkids and all of that. So till now we remain youth. So we shall operate on the speed of 4IR. All right, colleagues, without wasting time, let me welcome the minister, the HOD, the chairpersons of the different boards of the two entities that are here, the CEO, the senior managers that are with us here. You are welcomed in this session of public accounts committee. Let me also welcome our members on my left, and also our officials from Parliament that are supporting our work. It has been a long day. We've been together since morning. And this session is only to conclude on the two parts of the annual report of the Department of Economic Development and Tourism, Part C on governance, and Part E, which is the financial information, together with the two entities, Saldanha IDZ and Westco. So just first to deal with the protocols and let the members on my left to introduce themselves officially. Let me start with myself. My name is Noemi Nkondlo. I'm currently I'm a member of COPA, but also an interim chair, because our official chairperson has not been around for the week. And in any way, the members of my committee, they like me that much because it's my birthday month. So they chose that I chair. So this is my birthday gift. So be kind to me. Over to you, members. Can you introduce yourself? Thank you. I'm going to first give to Minister if you've got any opening remarks you want to share with us. Thank you, Minister. We agreed, colleagues, before we start, that we are going to give to Westcro to lead us, and then we'll continue with either the department or Saldanha IDZ to follow thereafter. So in that context, let me give over to Mr. Tim Harris, if there's anything you also want to say. That?
Beyond saying happy birthday, Chairperson, let me just say this was a particularly difficult year that we presented because of external factors such as the drought. And it was a challenging audit, but I need to give thanks and credit to our CFO, colleague Dunn, and her team, as well as our audit committee.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Members, I think we'll go straight to Part C, which is page 71 to page 78. I'm going to take questions on this section. Can I see hands, if any? Member Batman? Member Batman, thank you.
Thank you. remuneration is calculated or determined for the sake of board members.
Thank you, Member Bergman. Any other questions, Member? Okay, let me allow Westco to respond.
Thanks, Chair. I'll do the first one and I'll ask the CFO to deal with the second. The first question is yes, all of the apologies were noted by the board and by the board and are effective in the board rules.
It was
certainly
noted that the remuneration for the board is determined by the initial treatment, so we use
Thank you. Any follow-up, Member Batman? Okay. Member Mitchell? Come again? Okay, the question you want to raise is linked to, is in governance, but is linked to... Yeah. That's fine. That's fine.
I think JJ of the two, and I think the people know that if we have this, I think it's important that we put on this again, that the composition of the board is obviously determined by the Westboro Act. So I want to go to the nominated two directors by local government, and which get paid for attending meetings as part of other board members. I know in the previous years, or the last 2 years, as I was advised, I was told that it would. That the bottom was Rusia and at the time was the Premier League was the MCU, that there was going to be some sort of way to look at the fact that public is the interest that serves on the fact that they serve on the board as well. Maybe the fact that they play to serve on the board. That could be looked at. But it's something that they need a quarter progress made.
Thank you, members. Any other questions? Okay.
Okay. So, the member initials referring to, I think, the board is reflected on page 129 of the manager. The board took a decision flowing from the discussion that the members are talking about that local government representatives should be remunerated just for their travel costs. So that's why those amounts are in there. They are not making a claim on board fees.
Can I then ask that in the next year's annual report that this is indicated like that? Because I said this morning when the market was stable, it was on the public document, and we believe we have the assumption that they are being paid.
Thank you. Can we then, with that speed of youth, move to the financial section? You still want to ask question on C, Member of America?
Related to the previous question is that the presentation from local government would determine that and the presentation that you currently have comes from the same geographical area. I mean, if you put one representation from local government in certain areas, you can't regard it as a
that Selga should find somebody who can represent a kind of non-metro view, and that that could include a business person from outside of Cape Town. But in the end, the identified members for this current board that are currently serving are Mayor Kuhn, the local government mayor of Coastal Island, and Mayor Monsieur, the district mayor of Wine. So they are from different districts. But I understand there is a view that perhaps those nominees should be interpreted differently by Selga, and that currently their Conservative board is fully compliant with that.
Okay, can we then move to part E, which is from page 89 to the last page? Any questions on part E? Member Amadika?
And third, it really aligns our interests as the provincial government of the Western Cape via Westgrowth with the private shareholders in the film studio. So it was not so, it's a complicated structure to understand, but it's in the end it results in a very simple relationship. And we currently sit in a situation where they have not reached that investment target, and therefore we have not exercised our right to put our share. So I think it's a fairly well designed instrument from the province.
Section C and Section E. If so, thank you very much, members, for the questions and also from Westgrowth for the responses. And I think at this point we can confirm having concluded this annual report of Westgrowth. Thank you very much, and once again, we congratulate, I think, the effort and also maintaining a clean audit which is something that I think as a committee we welcome. And therefore, without wasting time, you are released, you know, as the youth of this committee, off you go. You can enjoy yourselves for the weekend. Without wasting time, members, as the West Group is giving us, can I then ask for the Saldana IDZ? Saldana IDZ. We're trying to be metro, urban, rural, bias minister. Thank you very much, team. The team is taking its seat. CEO, is there anything you want to say in leading us to your report? Okay. Thank you very much. Members, once again, without wasting time, we are then going to consider Part C, corporate governance is from page 50 to 57. We'll start with that, so that we run quickly to the last part, that is Part E. But if a member has got any question or comment that relates to both, is welcome. Member Batman, and then Member Michelle. Thank you. Are you covered? Okay. All right.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. I'm going to ask our company secretary, Mr. Martinez, to answer the first question on the emotion to speak, and then the second question on the BE education and what is the reason for us, and I'll respond to that. I'll ask our supply chain manager, Dale Walters, to answer.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Member, for the question. In respect of the apology, we received for the particular director an apology. The apology is also recorded in our minutes for the particular meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Member, for the question on the BEE certificate. across your question, you are correct. There are two disclosure requirements, one in the annual report, and then there's one which is an electronic system put that sits with that will be commissioned with certain information regarding the elements that will be certificate has to be completed. We are in the process of finalizing our BE certificate. We've got a draft at the moment. The cost estimates, the original estimate we got from the consultant that's doing our accreditation is around about 40,000 rand, which is quite substantial. And I think initially that was the concern that the provincial treasury raised with national treasury through a position paper, stating that not only are the information that was, you know, the legislation that was sent to all the departments was confusing, but also that it was going to be quite a costly exercise. We had to add up all the departments and then the provinces and the departments and so forth. Thank you.
Any follow-ups or new questions? Member? Yes, Member Butler?
I could wait for the department later, but if the department has any comment on the legislative restrictions of the Act, it would be appreciated.
Okay. Do you want to take it to HOD?
Chair, of course, it is a problematic restriction. One, I mean, it is in the Act, and so it is now being required. But the major problem we've got is that the enormous cost that this generates. I mean, I think it is approximately 35,000-40,000. Westboro, I think, is just over 50,000 for their size. That's the approximation. And our department is over 70,000. That's the figures we get. Now, as you look at departments like education and health, there will be substantially more. And effectively, the departments are owned by the people of South Africa. Technically, your government departments, but the commissioner requires us to verify the BBBE status. So there is a concern. I know our provincial treasury has been, as Mr. Porter Taylor has said, taking this up with National Treasury, but notwithstanding, we are required to do that, and most departments and arms are in the process now of being verified so that we will have the verification certificates in place.
Member America?
Thank you. Thank you for that information. Chair, it's a legislative requirement in the future. Non-compliance would not necessarily affect the audit status or a clean audit status for that. So if, because the cost is prohibitive, I can well imagine that, would we, do we elect not to go through that particular process and risk getting a unqualified audit finding before we listed as that non-verification? Because certainly, one has to weigh up against service delivery. That money could be used to deliver a particular service, much needed service. And does one then sacrifice the green tick in favor of a yellow tick for that matter?
Okay.
Chair, unfortunately, it's a part of the requirement of a statutory act of the Republic of South Africa. If you willfully non-comply, you are guilty of an offense of breaking one of the acts of that. So it's not the issue of you do it because you're going to get a clean audit. We don't know the findings of audit in general until the matter is finished. And it's really not an area that we tend to, as the honourable member alludes to, that we certain things we're just not going to do because we don't believe it's right. So we'll seek to comply as far as we can. And that's the issue.
Number two.
Yeah, thank you. I think I'm first
think on my side is to say, in terms of the expectation that we didn't comprehend it, but going forward, we should be expecting from us.
Okay, colleagues, any other new questions? Okay, I just wanted to ask a question on page 54. Page 54, 3.1. I see the report indicates that the audit function, the contract with the current auditors is ending in the next couple of days. So I'm interested to know, has the process already been initiated, and assuming that by the 1st of November we'll be having a new team, just to put that on the record.
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask Dale to respond to the appeal process for that.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Kasha. Yes, ironically, as we're walking here, the tent actually closed at 11 o'clock today. So I was just telling my CEO some of the results from the opening of the tender this morning. Realistically, We should adjudicate in the next 2 weeks, but we do have a clause in the existing contract that allows us for a 3-month extension period for handing over and to ensure that this year's plan is partially executed with the new team that comes in. Thank you,
Jay. Okay, thank you very much. I think that was the process I wanted to understand, that so that there is no gap. I will be very cautious of talking in the presence of politicians, talk about tenders. Okay? So try and avoid those words, you know, in the field of politicking. Those two words do not come together, do not change. So thank you very much for the response. Members, I think if we're done on this section on governance, can we then move to section E? Member Mitchell?
The significance for the significant increase and the other salary related pay. So what is other salary related pay? Can you get an indication of what that is for? Then on page 140 under note 20, there again it says other allowances, so I think it's just going to be an indication with regard to that. And then, Chair, I just want to, if the Chair could maybe just help me. Under other allowance, under notes 20, is that directed remuneration, is that for the board members? And if so, could we, I couldn't find it any easier than my apologies, if we can get a breakdown per board member, per what the payments were, like we saw in the Westro.
And Amanda?
Thank you, Chair. has been a significant inability of the entity to spend grant allocations, particularly as it relates to training and development and skills development within the disciplinary area that you operate in. And we know that, you know, it's often a community that is in dire need of economic development and skills development and training. What are the sort of impediments to spend the grant allocations? Because cannot simply be converted into living and used to operating expenses. Because the seekers that, you know, that you involved with, are they blockages there, or where are the blockages that we can unlock the full decentralization of the grant application? And then, Chair, on page 113, you state the last paragraph that the development of the feasibility study that is getting built with having an innovation campus. And was the feasibility study completed, and could we have a copy of it? We proceed with, you know, the kind of things around it. That's not sure.
Thank you.
So I think I've got on page 108. From page 108, was related to number 14 on the other family label table. I asked my CFO to explain the content of that item there and the difference from the year to year. And then I think we'll take it one by one.
Thank you, Jay. Question. Remember, the increase relates to group life benefits, and it was because of the finding difference of the plan that was made in the previous year that we made in the 2019. So there was a report in the 2019 that's why it's actually for its group life.
And then page 114. Page 112, the grant allocation, and note 19. At the bottom of the page, you see the allocations that are spent from the deeper initiator, and I think that's the reference point that the investor made. I think the transfers that take place from the teachers in the transfer agreement have particular milestones that need to be reached, and evidence needs to be sent to them to fulfill that requirement for the certain conditions of that policy. And so we've had challenges, and we have noticed to the committee that this is always an area of work that we are always needing to manage with our service providers as well as the seekers to ensure that there's proper timing between the procurement of the service providers, the start of the training program, the evidence they collect, the submission they make to the seeker, and then the seeker or the other seekers turn it out and doing the assessment. So that is the cause of the delay. But I will say that, moving on from the question from the previous standing committee, skills development is an unfunded mandate. So, and they have certainly been very responsive to our needs. So it's really a timing management issue, and to try and really, what we strategy that we've done so of the past year, of the past 2 years, is do a clause-by-clause discussion with the service providers on what the requirements are from the seat. Just to, they might have been doing it for years and years and years, but just to be patient and understand, so everybody understands the contractual environment that we're operating in. So that's the question on 112. On the question on the innovation campus on page 113, that visibility has been done. We would certainly share locally with the committee. And we certainly,
actually extend an invitation to the committee as well to go and see all of the activity in the church will certainly take care of it. On question number 20 on page 114, so with regards to the Sunday organization, that in detail is Mill City on page 120. So that is in there. And then on page 114, also the other allowances, so that relates to non speaking on TA voters. We are talking about the cell phones, across the company, cell phone allowance. And then on page 115, the AG. For the other under the direction of the CEO and the CFO, those related cell phone allowances. So we will keep saying allowances. On the question on the AG fees, I'll ask that one on page 115. I'll ask my CFO to answer.
Chair, I cannot speak on behalf of the AG, but that's the fee that we face, and mostly because of the additional work and the ramp up. The AG was ramping up, getting ready and getting operational. So I assume that there was more work to be done by the AG to ensure that the council decision would be presented.
Also, on page 115 on the skills and transport. So we allocate some under general expenses, but training short skills projects and transport short skills projects actually relate to the training costs of community members. So it's part of the skills development program. And what we have seen and in feedback and engagement with the community is that they require assistance with transportation to get to the right return that they can attend the courses. And then on the next one is page 120. As I said, I don't the discussion of the directors organization.
Any follow-up member? Any follow-up? Okay. Can I just make a comment on the grant? I think the concern is going to continue, CEO, and the team. I think in light of the conversation we had earlier on, that this remains an unfunded mandate. Because if so, we would want to see that when there are grants available, those grants must be utilized. Because then it speaks to the funding model of this particular mandate, because we've got a full program according to what you're reporting in the, on the other side. We've got a full program with almost, I think, three sub-programs, and now, which I'm assuming that at this point, and I'm just saying at this point, such can only be realized through grant funding. So if you do not manage that, it remains a serious risk for yourselves and also for the community. So I think it's something, if it's part of the invite of going to Ghana, I think it's something as members you must consider. Part of the conversation, I think, should be to help us understand how are you gonna, you know, what type of funding model are you gonna put in place to try and respond to this. Yes, if it is grant, what are some of the risks? Because as we are saying, the challenge of grants in their own very nature, because you get them from national, sometimes even the timing that you get those grants, you know, may actually be delayed versus the actual start of the project, which is some of the experiences I've seen with people who are relying on CETA funding, you know. So I think it's something that we have to really follow and look at, because we don't want you to have a good program that, you know, looks good on paper but cannot be realized, because there isn't, you know, some kind of a certainty in terms of its funding. With that said, colleagues, I think also with the conversation, we're not going to go back on the conversation on BBBE. I think Minister being here, I think it's a conversation you can always, as politicians, take back into the House, Minister. If for any reason we believe that there is any unjustifiable compliance requirements. But at this point, I think also with the AG, we've made the point that so long as it's a requirement, it's law, it shall be complied with. But we take note, I think, of the implications that I think all the departments have raised. And actually, they did indicate to us that the matter has been raised through Treasury, which we believe that when there are any of such regulatory concerns, time in between must be utilized effectively for such a report, and maybe even between minister and the national minister around those implications and how can we mitigate around them. But once we come to the point of scope where we have to look at compliance, you see, those issues are going to be a side issue once we get to a point, and I think as the agent has said, next year they're going to be material if they're not attended to. So I would think that the reality or the implication of cost that is seemingly to be a bigger challenge is something that I think would agree that let there be a conversation between, you know, the department, the treasury, with the DTI or the BBB commission, and find a way of how to ensure that this particular compliance, you know, does not put extra burden, you know, especially that financial burden, you know, to the department. I'm sure the issue is not whether people want to comply or not. I think the issue is trying to raise the rationale, you know, and any other mechanisms that were to assist. So with that said, and I think we already have agreed a predetermined or a commitment that when we conclude all of the different reports, because we see it cross-cutting to all, we'll then make that resolution, which I think our minister here is one of the key people that will have to help us with the minister, as the Minister of Finance, you know, to take up this matter and find a resolution on it. With that said, colleagues, I think we are concluding on Sagana IDZ, thanking you for the time, for coming to SCOPA, and also for the engagement and answering the questions to the satisfaction of members. And I think we then have concluded your session. We can be allowed now to get onto the N7, you know. Hopefully, you know, you don't have back-to-back traffic there. But I think we've concluded. We'll then try to keep up with our youthfulness into the department part of the report. Thank you very much, Tim, from IDZ. Our final round, honourable. Without wasting time, can we then go to part C of the report, which starts. I must give feedback. I like the colouring that the department has utilised to help us, you know, those that are adult youth. You know, young at heart, it makes things much more easier. So thank you, Minister and the HOD. On part C, page 143 to 150. Any questions, members, on part C? Yes, ma'am. Any other question, Member America?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just at page 146, the new cases in relation to fraud and corruption, but I think there's a question about this.
to the department.
Yes, Chair, thank you very much. The apology, yes, we definitely get formal apologies and they're recorded as such in the minutes that they are there. The case is referred to on page 136. the fact that there were two cases shown indicates, it shows that one case was closed because it was entered twice as a case. The case has been finalized after the report period has been completed. It highlighted that the, from our forensic investigation report, there was no basis for a fraudulent investigation. But it was referred back to the department's internal control unit just to make sure that there were no obvious internal control areas where the matter might have been breached in chief procurement. So the report has been issued, and yeah, that's the situation now.
Okay. Any other questions, member? A follow-up? Okay, can maybe just for the record, something that also we've been carrying as a discussion in terms of the risks, acknowledging the ones that are here on page 145, Minister and the HOD, I think one of the conversations which we've also raised during the morning discussion is also to ask the risk of the state of local economy. I think we continue to place that, and I will always make this reference, Minister, that I think that the Pero and Nero always places or reflects back to us, you know, on that particular dichotomy that we need to always be looking at, especially now that also from the president's side there's going to be this district delivery model. And also I think Minister would recall during the oversight visit with the NCOP, one of the focus was on local economies. I think we can't emphasize that point more, and I'm raising now as a risk because municipalities are really struggling, you know, to meet up the increasing population, as we'll see in their socio-economic analysis from the NERF. So it then says, one way or the other, it's no longer luxury for us to discuss or to jealously, you know, be having an interest into the issue of boosting local economies, because the sustenance of those municipalities in terms of service delivery lies in them tapping into their local economic opportunities, you know. So I think for me, I'm raising it from a point of risk, and since I think it's something that is always mentioned when one reads the mayor, you know, and looks at the situation of the municipalities, and the fact that sometimes it ends up because people are looking for economic opportunities, whether it's jobs, you know, skills. I see the impact of crime and safety. You know, people end up picking up. If you see the capital projects that happens, including in Saldanha, people start, you know, wanting to destroy things because they are looking for economic opportunities. So there's a direct correlation with the national economy, as you will be talking about, but also the situation that then affects the local economy. So I think that, for me, those two risks must always be placed on the radar screen. So I think it was just a more of a comment, because we really agreed that when the minister is here, I think it's an issue we must keep on discussing, and I'm sure even in our committee, it's something that we'll keep having a conversation on the different initiatives that the department is involved in. If there's nothing, Minister and HOD, I think we've come to the, is there anything, colleagues, that you want to raise? None? Okay. I then take that we've then tabled both Part C and Part E of the annual report. Oh, Part C, I'm sorry, my apologies. Yeah, the youth now, I think the youth is taking over. The youth is taking over. Apologies. Can we then go to part E? Yeah, no, the youth is taking over. Yeah, it seems to be around adults. Any other question, members? Member Katna? Part E, yeah.
How much debt
and how can it be recovered? Page 254.
Okay. Thank you, member. Department?
Chair, I'm going to focus on 205 and try and deal with the impairment. And when I say try and deal with the impairment, because historically every year we spend a fair degree of time detailing that. But what I'd like to say is that the investment in the convention centre was an investment made not necessarily by the Western Cape government as an investment in a business as one normally invests in a business, although the Convenco is a business. But it was an investment that seeds, together with the City of Cape Town, a convention centre that is aimed to stimulate business tourism into the Western Cape and into the region. So the net benefit, the biggest benefit we get, is not necessarily in the value as the investment centre grows as a business, but in the value of the tourism benefits that is realised through the ability of the region to attract a lot more people from the region. So I want to put that there. The impairment, however, says that the amount of money that we invested, the cash that has been invested, both by the City of Cape Town and by the province, particularly with the expansion, that the investment centre Convenco is then valued. And the valuation that the Convenco has on its company and its operation, that value is less than the amount of money that has been invested. And the difference in that is the impairment. Now, the reason why the value is less is because the intended profitability or the intended financial benefit that you get over periods of time has not yet been realized, because the period of time is still in the future and you've made the investment in the present. So you want to actually recover those benefits of an investment into the future. I've tried to explain that, but Chair, the last time we did this, we also came afterwards and did a special presentation to both the standing committee to detail how this thing actually works. So, because the numbers, you know, why do we see it as a contribution to business tourism and investment, and the benefits we reap from conventions and conferences coming here, that's the return that we get on the tourism, but there's also a cash investment, a real asset that we've got, 23% about, that we've got, and that has to also realize the value. The problem is the amount of money you have to put in to get the thing built and there, and so the expansion is one of that you're not going to recover immediately through the profitability, but it's over a longer period of time. And so that's why they call it that your investment is impaired, your investment is restricted in value, because you still have to pay those benefits in the future. Chair, that's a very complex thing, very simply, but I'm hoping the members could understand that, but it is one of those things that we are asked from time to time to come and fully explain from an accounting perspective.
Thank you.
Can I continue?
I'm going to ask that on page 196, 198, and 199, if the CFO, Ms. Abrams, could we take those up? Probably she gets right there.
Just having a question on 196. I'm not sure about the reduction. It's actually an increase in terms of consultants. So the movement from 114 to 445,000.
So I indicated that the expenditure was 70.3%. In the head there's this deviation about 30 percentage points. I didn't find out what the reason for that was.
So the 70.3% refers to the actual expenditure versus the budget. So initially, when we did the market analysis, the project was costed at 653,000. And when we only put out the tender, it came back at 455,000. On page 198, machinery and equipment. So the department undertook quite an extensive cost containment policy over the last 3 years, and as part of that cost containment policy, what we looked at is how do we actually start saving money on items like machinery and equipment. So some of the initiatives that we introduced was the expenses that we used to purchase, managers actually keeping the office equipment for a longer period. So what you actually see right through the financial statement is that reduction in costs coming through as part of the cost containment policy. If you look at page 199, the 51,000 is against lead gratuity, and that's basically a stock member that are either designed or retired will be actually paid out lead gratuity. So the reduction in terms of the 2018-19 year will mean that either nobody designed or nobody had leave when they were actually designed. Question on page 254. I wasn't sure what the question was.
Question?
Page 254. So the lease credit is the value of leave that, we would owe staff members in terms of each of those lease categories. So not the lease date, but the value of leave in terms of each of those categories.
Any follow-ups? Are you fine in the park?
Yes. I want to understand if they are recovering or is something lost. That's it.
So it's not a loss, it's a liability. So if any of those staff members would leave the department, we would owe them that amount of money.
Yeah.
And just the last issue, I'm very sure I think the value of the investment for Cape Town International Convention Center is under the first note on the 12th, which is 303 million.
Colleagues, any other follow-ups or new questions? Yeah. The youth is taking over. It has already taken over of the chair, so I'm guided by you now. Adults must guide me or else. I've already concluded the annual report before it's even finished. That's the impact of a Friday. Okay, colleagues, are we... By indication, am I getting a note that we are done on this annual report? Okay. Okay. Thank you, Minister and the HOD and the team for responding to all our questions. And still, I think I'm also being advised from the table that this issue of opt-out and what? Yes, that one. It's a very complex thing. Works on a Friday. So we would like to commit you, HOD and the Minister, when we have time, to really take us through to understand. So that I'm hoping that by the time we conclude this administration, at least would be understanding it far, far better. And I'm told that even our predecessor had challenges. It seems it's a very complicated thing, and I worry again with things that are complicated in terms of auditing. We don't want pain on here. So that's why things must be simplified as much as we can, you know, even if people must speak indigenous languages, if need be. But thank you very much for that and for that commitment. I think, colleagues, we have then concluded Part C and also concluded correctly now Part E of the annual report of the Department of Economic Development and Tourism. And the report then has been tabled, and the book has been tabled of the annual report of the Department 2018-2019. And for that, I wish to thank you, Department, for the good work that you have done in the last financial year, the things that you continue to do. And I think also thank the Minister to ensure that the work of your predecessors you are able to sort of consolidate into the actual now presentation to ourselves. Looking forward, I think, to your first annual report in this financial year. And also, I think, thank the team for the hard work as the officials of the department. And as you know, we are paid. This is why we are paid, is to ask you these questions. So you mustn't take it personal. You know, it's in an endeavor for us to try and understand our work much more better. And we appreciate that you are always patient enough with us to make us understand. With those words, and I think I want to also thank the Auditor General and also the audit team, also with the good work of ensuring that the departments are compliant in terms of their governance requirements. With that said, colleagues, youth has already chipped in long time ago from where I'm sitting. So I want to release you. Well wishes for the weekend. We shall see each other. The meeting is then adjourned. We shall remain as the members of the committee.